Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News. Speaking in a microphone that doesn't sound as though it's actually working.
I can hear you. I just shattered my own eardrums with my loudness, but I can hear you.
That's great. It's clearly going to be one of those, do I sound normal?
No, you don't.
Yeah. Hi.
You want to switch to a different microphone?
This just in. Let me try this again.
Does this have anything to do with you making some kind of a noise right before the show?
Greetings, fellow Portlanders.
Something going...
From the Emerson News Network.
You swearing.
This is Legion of News.
Try this again. From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
I can't hear me.
That's great. That's
where
wonderful.
Am I?
You're right over there, Don.
What happened to my mic?
Existentially speaking, Don, where are any of us?
But I was just hearing me.
You know, nobody likes a whiner.
Hello? I'll just yell it from here.
Here's what's going to happen at this moment. This just in. Our microphones appear to be giving us a dickens of a time here at the Emerson News Network. So we're going to do what broadcasters do, Don. We're going to adapt. We're going to overcome. We're going to improvise. You are going to use this single microphone. This microphone that is, even now, carrying my words to the people. And while you do that, I will endeavor to repair the rest of our operation so that the people of Portland might learn, might be informed, might, in fact, be entertained and amused as they go about their daily business. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I give you... Don Taylor.
Now I have a different microphone. Well, here's what's happening. Nine former students of an Oregon boarding school are charging that they were deprived of water, tortured, and otherwise abused. Rupert Murdoch's News of the World is closing for good this Sunday. And a grizzly bear killed a hiker at Yellowstone Park. Why don't I just read one of those stories right now while you're fiddling. Nine former students of a shuttered boarding school in Central Oregon charged in a lawsuit that they were deprived of sleep, water, food, and medical care at a place where parents paid more than $6,000 a month to straighten out troubled teenagers. The $14 million lawsuit filed Wednesday in state court says one girl was forced to disclose to her classmates that her father sexually abused her and to act out sexual propositions with classmates and adult staff members. The allegations are similar to those that led the state of Oregon to order the Mount Bachelor Academy closed in 2009. A year later, the state reached a settlement that withdrew the suspension but maintained that the investigation was justified. The school's lawyer says that it denied charges of mistreatment. How you doing over there? Okay. Rupert Murdoch's News of the World will close for good this Sunday, the parent company announced on Thursday. News International Chairman James Murdoch delivered the news to the 160-year-old tabloid staff, telling them that while he's proud of the paper's history and journalism, the news and its corporate parent failed to get to the bottom of repeated wrongdoing that occurred without conscience or legitimate purpose. Profits from Sunday's paper will be given to charity.
I say, speaking into a microphone.
Ooh, look at
Fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Excellent.
Does my normal microphone work?
Well, let's not worry about that right
okay.
now.
Okay. Oh, sure.
A good plan today is better than a perfect plan next week,
That's
Don.
That's all right. Here we go. Okay.
The person with the currently working microphone should just continue reading the news.
Well, okay. A killer grizzly is roaming Yellowstone National Park's backcountry after mauling a man who apparently surprised the female bear and its cubs while hiking with his wife in the park's first fatal grizzly attack in 25 years. Officials closed remote campgrounds and trails near the scene of Wednesday's attack, close to Canyon Village, which sits in the middle of a sprawling park. The identity of the 57-year-old victim was being withheld until his family could be notified. The mauling occurred just after Yellowstone's peak weekend for tourism. While lamenting the death, officials said they didn't want to overemphasize the danger to visitors. Diane Schober, director of the state Wyoming Travel and Tourism Agency, said, "This is a wild and natural park. At the same time, the likelihood of this happening again is small." It was park's first fatal grizzly mauling since 1986, but the third in the Yellowstone region in just over a year, amid ever-growing numbers of grizzlies and tourists roaming the same wild landscape. The bear attacked Wednesday morning to defend against a perceived threat, park officials said. The victim's wife called 911 on her cell phone, and other hikers in the area responded to her cries for help.
By the way, I should say that in addition to the microphone kerfuffle, which seems to be at least somewhat remedied now here at the Emerson News Network studios, there's apparently it was a momentary glitch on Cascadia.fm just a few moments ago. So if you were... I swear to God, I'm not making this up. If you were listening to Legion of News a few minutes ago and then you were interrupted by what sounded very much like a program about jazz, I have no explanation for how that happened.
Yeah, because that's not going to happen here. We know nothing about jazz.
That's one of those things where I think we just passed through the tail of Comet X5J just now, and hopefully that's taken care of. Also, Dawn smells like a coconut. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, July 7th, 2011, which I think ought to explain everything. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also science on the march. If you want to get this program later on the day via a direct MP3 download, you can do so at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. You can also get it via iTunes if you like, and on your mobile device so that you can take the news and or smooth jazz goodness with you everywhere. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, coming up with a Clown Watch, also another installment of the greatest songs ever made, held over from yesterday, and a delightful panoply of news and events for all of y'all. Here is Don Taylor.
Man, when I asked you how you were doing there earlier, you gave me such a look.
That's because it's not really about me, Dawn. It's about the people who are listening. It doesn't matter how Rick Emerson's doing. It matters how the people who tune in expecting to be amused and entertained are doing.
I mean, that was one of those looks that I would have been surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised if the back of my head just burst into flames.
Well, then maybe someone will learn to speak when spoken to.
The Oregon Liquor Control Commission announced a crackdown Friday on the Northeast Portland bar near a deadly shooting last weekend. Officers found 34-year-old Leonard Irving dead and two other people wounded in a shooting near Seasonin's on Northeast 82nd Avenue in Thompson around 12:30 a.m. on June 26. Isaiah Eric Manley Jr. was arrested for the shooting. People will now be searched and metal detectors will be put in place, and anyone found in violation is denied entry into the bar for 24 hours. And no one is allowed back in if they leave after 10:30 p.m.
Is Seasonin's a name like Scamps or Scandals or Rags or Tags or?
Well, it's spelled S-E-E-Z-N-I-N. Seasonin's.
Okay, so it's not like, I thought it was maybe, I thought when you said Seasons, that was the name of like an estate or something, like, you know, like Brookston's or West Egg.
No, it's Seasons. It kind of almost looks like a sneezin'.
Okay.
Only it's Seasons.
Seasons. Okay.
Seasons. Certified law enforcement will be on
Is
duty.
It an epileptic club?
I
guess that would be Seasons.
Seizures. Which would be a great name for a club, by the way. Seizures.
Okay.
Maybe that's just me. Certified law enforcement will be on duty Friday and Saturday nights, and anyone wearing gang-related clothing will be refused entry. Alcohol sales will end at 11 p.m., and the bar was ordered to close at 11:30. OLCC Public Safety Program Director Rudy Williams said, "The violence at Seasons is unacceptable. These 7 restrictions are serious. We will work with Portland Police to hold Seasons to these restrictions. If they fail to follow them, he will face license cancellation."
It sounds like there's some sort of a brawl happening at a Whole Foods or something, or just, you know, at like a place where you go to make gumbo.
Yeah, it sounds like it ought to be like, you know, a family coffee shop somewhere that you'd hit like when you had to turn off the turnpike to use a restroom somewhere.
Not really a place where there's a ruckus going on.
No, or a kerfuffle.
I'm going to hand you 2 pieces of initial sound. One of these you may already have. It's some of the Casey Anthony stuff, and then there's some shuttle sound
as
well.
Yes. Well, let's do that, Casey Anthony. Sorry. Casey Anthony will be freed next week after spending nearly 3 years in jail on accusations she killed her 2-year-old daughter, punctuating a case that captured the nation's attention and bitterly divided many over whether she got away with murder.
But white people have their own OJ now, thank God.
Oh, I know. And who jumped in to talk about that on the news last night, of course?
Gloria Allred.
Marcia Clark.
Yeah.
Marcia Clark. Like, hooray! I'm not the most hated defense attorney ever, or prosecutor ever. Hooray! While cleared of charges of killing and abusing her daughter, Kaylee, Anthony was convicted of lying to investigators and sentenced Thursday to 4 years, the maximum punishment she faced. But she was given credit for the time she's already served and for her good behavior, and so she's set to be released on Wednesday. Judge Belvin Perry also fined her $1,000 on each of the 4 counts. Criminal defense attorney Alan Dershowitz told CNN's Piers Morgan that the prosecution could have secured a conviction if they had tried the case differently.
Is this cut 3?
Yes.
All right, this is Anthony 3.
They had charged this woman just with covering up, lying to the police, failing to report. She would have been easily convicted. If they had charged her with manslaughter, accidental manslaughter, probably she would have been convicted. But because they sought the death penalty and overcharged and overtried, they ended up with nothing. It was badly tried.
The moral is, don't try. The moral is, always aim for the lowest you could possibly achieve. Never overreach.
Yeah, she was, and Casey Anthony also, just a huge sack of crazy. Among the things she lied about to the police was that she worked at Universal Studios theme park. She even went so far as to take the detectives to the park, talk her way past security guards, and take the detectives into a building before she finally ended up fessing up that she didn't work there and never had.
Somebody's a sociopath.
She also lied about leaving her daughter with a non-existent nanny named Zanny.
Zanny.
What's the nanny's name? Zanny. Zanny the nanny.
That's fantastic. She just took the N and turned it on its side.
Yes.
She didn't even get a different letter. She just slightly rearranged one of the letters that was already there.
Her defense attorneys argued before sentencing that her conviction should be combined into one, but the judge disagreed, saying law enforcement spent a great deal of time, energy, and manpower looking for Kaylee, and she needs to pony up something. And as I just mentioned, former O.J. Simpson prosecutor Marcia Clark told CNN's Piers Morgan that there was enough evidence to convict Anthony.
Really? Was there, Marcia Clark? There was enough evidence to convict, yet it wasn't able to be done somehow?
The question was always, to me, whether it would be conviction of premeditated murder or manslaughter. Those were the big issues, given the lack of physical evidence. But it was a stunner to me that she was convicted of none of the homicide counts involving Kaylee Anthony.
It was stunning. Was it, Marcia Clark, that somebody screwed that up?
It is literally the second most stunning case I have ever heard about, she said.
You want to talk about somebody who ages badly. She looks like a sleestack if you see her now. I mean, I love Marcia Clark. I really do. I find her strangely hot.
Well, yeah.
But somebody's life has not turned out the way that she planned it, I think. It's all that damn Christopher Darden's fault, isn't it, Marcia Clark?
Ladies, you can't have it all.
No.
A California man who strapped 15 live lizards to his chest and tried to walk through customs at LAX has been sentenced to 15 months in prison. Michael Plank of Lomita, California, was also fined $2,000 and will be on supervised release for 3 years after completing his sentence. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said Plank was returning from Australia in 2009 when custom agents found two geckos, two monitor lizards, and 11 smaller lizards fastened to his body. Assistant U.S. Attorney Dennis Mitchell? Oh, he grew up to have a good job. Dennis the Menace, Dennis Mitchell.
Is that his last name?
Yeah.
I thought that was the guy who lived next door. It's Mr. Wilson.
Right. Now he's assistant U.S. attorney. He's menacing people in a professional capacity.
With a slingshot sticking out of the back of his suit.
He says the animals are at the San Diego Zoo, but he wouldn't comment on what would happen with them. Plank pleaded guilty last year to smuggling wildlife into the U.S. He was represented by attorney Larry Backman, who asked for a lighter sentence. It may soon cost money to use Multnomah County libraries. County commissioners hope to put a measure on the November ballot that would tax county members for library use. The fees gathered would provide tax funding for the library system starting at about $63 million a year. In turn, the idea would free up $10 million a year in the county's budget. County commissioners expect to vote on whether to put the library district on the ballot in the next few months.
Now, this makes me sound dumb, but how do libraries paid for now? I mean, I would assume, I guess all this time I have assumed that they were paid for by taxes. It's not like they're holding a yard sale every year. How do the libraries run everywhere?
I'm thinking since they're saying that this would be a measure to tax people for using the libraries, that maybe there's just some kind of a fund for the libraries, and this is going to be an additional thing.
But that would be...
Yeah.
But that, okay, he said, right here, somebody says, Multnomah County libraries are currently paid for by your taxes, mostly property taxes. So this would, maybe it would not be a property tax as much as it would be a tax on even those. So it would be a tax that is more evenly applied as opposed to a property tax, which applies only to property owners. Which actually makes more sense since the library isn't just restricted to property owners.
That's right.
I mean, the library, is theoretically available to everybody. So that actually makes a great deal of sense, especially because our library system here is fantastic. So somebody says, taxes, donations, et cetera, the occasional book drive. The library system in Multnomah County is really exceptional. And I say that after coming here, from Utah, which is a place where you think that they would be all about the library system because they're all about, knowledge and education and families and, children and whatever. And nobody in Utah ever wants to pay a goddamn cent to keep the libraries running, as opposed to here where the libraries are, flawlessly run in many regards. You can now rent audiobooks from the library, like via the net. You can actually just go online and you can rent downloadable MP3s of audiobooks. Yeah. The new Howie Mandel autobiography, in which he discusses his lifelong struggle with OCD, which is called, Here's the Deal, Don't Touch Me. You can actually just go online and you can sign in with your library card number and get that MP3 downloaded. And it's got some DRM on it, so you can't just like be passing it around everywhere, but you can download it right to your iPod.
Wow. I have just moved back to Multnomah County, and now I have to re-up with the Multnomah County Library, and that's a good thing to know.
The library system here is wonderful. I have no complaints at all. And even just a lot of small things here, which you take for granted because if you haven't really experienced a library system elsewhere, like the idea that, as dumb as it sounds, that you can have a book transferred from any branch to any other branch without cost.
Right.
You can actually, for a tiny cost, have the book just mailed to your home if you want. You can drop off books for any branch at any other branch, which a lot of cities won't let you do. A lot of cities make you return the stuff to wherever you got it. But if you get something from the Belmont branch, you can actually drop it off downtown. And if you see something downtown, they don't have it at Belmont, you can have them send it up there, and they'll send you an email or send it to your home when it's there.
And that includes DVDs as well. And they have just a vast catalog of DVDs. The Washington County Library System is also very, very good in Livia and Tualatin, and we had a great library there and also had just a great selection of DVDs in the library itself proper, including a foreign section that I swear to God had, I think, damn near every classic film on the Criterion Collection just on the shelf in the library there.
Yeah, no, it really is quite something. So I would encourage anybody who has not spent any time at the Multnomah County Library recently to do so. I think you will be pleasantly surprised. And that is the thing that, anybody who bitches about paying for libraries, should just be removed from the human population. That's somebody that should just be shot into the sun.
Libraries are just one of those community resources that are awesome in so very, very many ways, including things like the computers that are available for public use, which, granted, the couple of times I've had to use them, I'm sitting around guys downloading porn at 9 o'clock in the morning and hobos, but it is there for me to use. which is awesome.
Well, really, and hobos got to have porn too, Don.
Right.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is 12:19 Pacific time. That means coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll have your Science on the March. Later on, entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll have a Clown Watch, also another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And it's coming up next hour. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download. Yeah. Or legionofnews.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A man named Jason Goodwin showed up at a PGA tournament wearing a giant tiger suit to cheer on his hero, Tiger Woods. He claimed he got pre-permission to wear the costume to the TPC Boston tournament. But once he arrived at the course, one of the golfers got angry about it. Goodwin, who said he had a valid ticket for the event, claimed security escorted him off the course after the first hole because Tiger Woods' playing partner, Angel Cabrera, complained that the tiger suit was too bright and bothersome. Goodwin filed a small claims lawsuit against the PGA in Boston, insisting his civil rights were infringed upon, and he wants $7,150 to make it right. Goodwin told TMZ that he chose that amount because it's the most he's allowed to sue for in small claims court, adding, "I want to make the point that you can't tell people what to wear."
Okay.
There is a photo of his bright and bothersome tiger suit, by the way, that you can see on our website.
Coincidentally, I, Rick Emerson, am frequently referred to as being too bright and too bothersome. This will be at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for, what is today, the 7th? Rickemerson.com visual aids for July 7th. You'll be able to see a photograph of this man in the tiger suit.
Passengers of the Island Explorer tourist bus in Ellsworth, Maine, got more than they bargained for when they paid their bus fare. They were evacuated from the bus only minutes before it became engulfed in flames. It happened at about 7:30 in the morning on the 6th of July. That would have been yesterday. Fire officials say the bus driver stopped the bus at the Maine Coast Mall because of a flat tire. Moments later, she could see smoke coming from the vehicle, and soon after, the entire bus was in flames. The bus was a total loss, but no one was hurt in the fire. Island Explorer, the tour company, said the bus was fully insured, and the cause of the fire is still under investigation.
The strange thing about this guy in the tiger suit, by the way, is that he appears to have his hands folded like he's some sort of a Tibetan monk, as though he kind of looks, you know what he looks like? He looks in this photograph, he has a look on his face like Snape has when he's watching the Quidditch match in the first Harry Potter film, and it appears as though he is casting a spell to make Potter fall off his broom. It's exactly what it is, except he's a tiger.
I would imagine that would be really disheartening and very, very, like, make you very, very sad if you're, like, a super fan of somebody like Tiger Woods and you go to all the trouble of getting this ticket to see him play in a PGA tournament and wear your tiger suit to show him how much you love him. And Tiger Woods' partner, like, has you escorted away by security because he doesn't like your tiger suit.
And plus, golfers are pussies. I mean, let's be honest. You know, the whole thing, you can't make any noise, you can't cheer, you have to clap really quietly, you're distracted by a guy wearing, and somebody else just notes, in what other sport are they, do players complain about the audience wearing something, quote, too bright and colorful? I mean, honestly, golf people, you know, golf people
irritate
me.
Well, tennis. Same thing in tennis.
Yeah, I mean,
you know. The former military psychiatrist charged in the deadly Fort Hood shooting spree will be tried in a military court and could face the death penalty, the Army announced yesterday. Major Nadal Hassan, 40, faces 13 counts of premeditated murder and 32 counts of attempted premeditated murder for the 2009 rampage at the Texas military base. The decision was made by Lieutenant General Donald M. Campbell, who is commander of the Army's 3 Corps and Fort Hood. The next step will be for the court to appoint a judge and set a trial date. Hassan's attorney, John Galligan, has argued that the Army should stop short of pursuing capital punishment, maintaining that such cases take longer to prosecute and are often more expensive. Galligan has not yet indicated whether he'll make an insanity defense on behalf of his client.
That was a transitional noise, by the way.
Oh, was it?
Made
with
my mouth.
That was a nice one. Here's a news story sent to us by an alert listener, and it also, I think, goes a long way to tell you the kind of email that I get every single day. A woman was being held on an attempted murder charge Wednesday after police say she spiked her roommate's peach smoothie with antifreeze 3 years ago. Celine Irene York, 33, was arrested this week in Eugene, Oregon, where she remained jailed pending extradition back to Utah. Police say Ed Zerbuchen, now 78, nearly died when York brought him a smoothie at a nearby store, dumped out half of it, and poured in antifreeze before he drank it. The September 29th, 2008 case went cold until a jilted boyfriend of York's...
The antifreeze case went cold?
Yes.
Okay.
But it didn't freeze.
All right.
A jilted boyfriend of York's recently came forward with new information. Police in Vernal, Utah, received a letter in April from Joseph Dominic Ferraro, who was awaiting trial in an unrelated case in Oregon, but had... They sound like great people. But had information about the crime. The documents say he provided specific details of where York bought the smoothie and the antifreeze. The biological father of York's teenage daughter, Zach Elderkin. His last name is Elderkin.
Yes.
Okay. He later told investigators that the girl told him at the time about the man they were living with and how they planned to, quote, knock him off. He came forward with the information after York drained his bank accounts and sold both of his cars while he was in jail.
I may have asked this before, but why do they make antifreeze sweet in the first place? Doesn't that seem like a really bad idea?
I think it may be unavoidable because of the chemicals.
Nothing is that you can add crap to it.
I guess you could add crap to make it taste bad on top of the sweet.
It seems very unlikely that just the natural result of putting a bunch of chemicals together that go into your radiator is that it tastes like candy. That seems almost impossible. I mean, the odds against that would be very... Think about all the things that they try to make as actual candies that taste terrible.
But I don't think they do it deliberately to make it taste good.
There's something really weird there. That is a thing that I've never heard explained because they always tell you, but, you know, make sure your dog doesn't drink antifreeze up because it tastes fantastic.
I'll bet Thomas Gill knows.
Why? I've never... You would think that if nothing else, that some company that made antifreeze... Even if it cost them an extra, half cent, they would be able to then make that up by marketing themselves as the antifreeze that won't kill your children.
Yeah.
People love things that don't kill children
It's the reason that natural gas smells so bad.
That's what I'm saying.
They add the smell to it.
They want you to be able to notice it, notice it's there. It's like people who make propane and propane accessories, where they all have left-handed threads as opposed to right-handed threads, just so you can't inadvertently gas yourself most of the time.
Hmm.
Anyway. It just seems like one of those things that is so fundamentally ill-designed that we should have taken care of it like 40 years ago. Let's see. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday. Here is Don Taylor.
It's time for Science
Fantastic.
News.
Fantastic. Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. You can also find them at facebook.com/squireselectric. Where you can give them a like if you'd like to help out, if you'd like to participate in helping them be a successful and thriving member of your community and your local circle of businesses. You can also read unsolicited testimonials from folks who've had Squires Electric come to their home or business and help all things run properly, help things get installed, get them prepared for the next inspection, or just get rid of giant rodents in the basement that seem to have chewed their way through all the power supplies, which apparently happens with astonishing regularity. The idea that...
Rats love to chew on wires.
Dogs love antifreeze, rats love wires. Don, and kids love handguns. It's just an unavoidable part of nature. And so you get the rodents that chew through the thing, everything. Suddenly there's a sizzling noise, all the lights go out, and then suddenly you got, rolling brownouts throughout California. You don't want that. So you can have Squires Electric come to your home or business. They can handle upgrades, installations, repairs. They can get you ready for your next inspection, or they can just rewire your home to make it more suitable for your current business or living needs. That's everything from your intercom wiring to your broadband, to the actual sockets, the actual plugs, the actual lighting fixtures, ceiling fans, whatever you got. It's 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. You can also reach them at facebook.com/squireselectric. They're the proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor.
More than 90% of the vitamin C in food comes from crops that depend on animals for pollination. As worries have grown over faltering populations of bees and other pollinators, researchers have tallied the number of food crops or the volume of food dependent on animal assistance. Looking at the animal contribution to individual nutrients, though, offers a dramatic picture of what's at stake. This was reported online June 22nd in Plus One. Bees and their colleagues supply humans with the majority of food sources of vitamin A, a large portion of folic acid, plus virtually all lycopene and considerable amounts of other antioxidants. So,
did you say bees are one of the pollinating animals?
Yes.
What are the other ones?
Well, a little bit of pollination comes from anything that flits from flower to flower to thing, like butterflies do it a little bit. I think, like your other stinging insects do as well. I think some pollination may even happen from like hummingbirds, because anytime they're carrying, you're going from plant to plant, you're carrying pollination.
It's like a really bright and colorful STD.
But you have asked repeatedly why we should be concerned about the loss of bees, and here is one of your answers.
What was the answer?
The answer is more than 90% of the vitamin C in our food comes from plants that depend on animals for pollination, including the majority of food sources of vitamin A.
It doesn't seem like there are fewer oranges at the store.
Not yet.
Okay. That's the answer to everything. Every time that anybody... It's always just, but someday. And you know, that never actually... None of these things... I defy anyone to tell me one of these dire predictions that we have had over the last 60 years that has had, that has actually happened. Anything that's actually transpired. Like that book Future Shock, where once the Earth passes 2 billion people, we will not be able to feed anyone and chaos will ensue. And it didn't happen. And then it was like 4 billion people. And then it was once we passed 5 billion. And none of those things ever, none of these things ever happened. None of them. Not one. And then what does happen? Meteorite that nobody sees, you know, because they're busy talking about bees being extinguished. And then there's a huge thing the size of Texas that just comes out of the sky and obliterates us.
That hasn't happened either.
It has happened. Now, see, but that's a thing that actually has happened. It has happened. It hasn't happened to us today.
No.
Ask dinosaurs if that's happened. I mean, that's a thing that really does occur. Bees just vanishing and suddenly there being no vitamin C, there's no evidence that actually happens.
There are less bees. There are less
okay.
bees.
There aren't less bees. There are fewer bees. For the love of Christ. Fewer, fewer, fewer. There are not less bees. You worked at a goddamn newspaper. Don't make me bring an AP style book in here and sit it on the table and I'll do it.
Oh,
I'll do it
gosh.
Right here. See
right.
what I did there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's Don Taylor.
Captive orangutans with positive outlooks live longer lives. Red apes rated by zookeepers as generally in a good mood, able to interact well with other animals, and successful at achieving daily goals lived longer over a 7-year follow-up than those given low well-being ratings. The survival advantage for the happiest orangutans over the gloomiest was equivalent to individuals in the cheery group having been 11 years younger than their actual ages. This was concluded by researchers in an upcoming issue of Biology Letters.
I like the idea that there is somewhere the happiest orangutan.
So of the two of us, you and I, me with my cheery demeanor, you with your fist pounding and your pedantry,
and surliness,
who will live longer? Who looks younger for their age? Who would be me?
Okay.
That would be me. Among other things, the pirates attacking the shipping lanes off the coast of Somalia are robbing climate researchers of valuable data about the Indian Ocean monsoons. Scientists at Florida State University, a center of global wind analyses, report that the increasingly frequent attacks on the Gulf of Aden and the Indian Ocean has changed the routes of international shipping in a way that has created a large data hole for some multi-decade studies of the importance in the region. The data void exists in the formation region of the Somali low-level jet, a wind pattern that's one of the main drivers of the Indian summer monsoon. A stable, multi-decade record has been interrupted, and consequently, long-term analyses of the jet derived from surface wind data are now showing artificial anomalies that will affect efforts by scientists to identify variations in the climate of the northwestern Indian Ocean. Since 1991, civil war in Somalia has given rise to lucrative ship hijackings and routine international warnings to commercial vessels to stay at least 600 miles off the Somalia coast. The piracy, especially since 2008, has pulled ship traffic away from the East Africa coast and the pathway of the seasonal Somali jet. Researchers have warned that this blip in the data will never go away, and future scientists will need to be aware of its geopolitical origins.
I'm going to start a porn site called Data Hole. Just FYI, in case anybody wonders.
Data. To avoid becoming lunch, male black widow spiders seem to assess the likelihood of females cannibalizing them before approaching a web to mate. This according to a set of experiments featured in the journal Animal Behavior.
The key is to avoid black widow spiders that are wearing a lot of juicy couture.
Yes, or who have tramp stamps.
Exactly.
Arizona State University researchers found that males used chemotactile cues on females' webs and silk to assess whether they recently caught food or if they're well-nourished. Acting selectively plays to males' advantage, since well-fed females show more interest in mating and are less likely to consume their sexual partners when compared to hungry females.
Sort of the BBW spiders.
If the female spiders are hungry, they'll skip sex altogether and just eat the males, especially if there's a surplus of them. This is why courting behavior in black widows is particularly extensive. Males not only have to maneuver around the web to show they're not prey, they also must demonstrate why females should reproduce with them.
So let me understand this. So really, the problem that men run into is a lot of these female spiders, under the promise of sex, in fact, are just using the men for dinner.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
It's good to see that some things are natural world constants.
And I think there's a lot that humans could learn from this. Like, for example, find out how hungry the woman is before you take her out.
Well, you know, or as Tom Likas would say, you just say, you know, you have dinner, I'll come pick you up afterward and we'll get a drink. Make her buy her own dinner, Don.
He's dreamy.
That's what I'm saying. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in the hour, you get your entertainment news. You are currently experiencing Science on the March.
Well, not anymore. It's done now.
Well, the music is still playing, so technically we're in the tail end. They're just now leaving the science tunnel and heading back out into the bright, dazzling light of a world into which they emerge more learned than when they entered the tunnel, because they've come out the other side armed with this knowledge that we have infused into their brain,
like in the Goonies.
Exactly. It's entering a brave new world, taking their first step into a larger existence. Partially brought to you by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also find them at 503-252-1609. They are the proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A Portland strip club owner facing sex abuse charges will be allowed to travel for business, a judge ruled yesterday. Dean McBail appeared in court yesterday, where the judge granted him the opportunity to travel to Washington for business. McBail owns the Dolphin Gentlemen's Clubs in Milwaukee and Beaverton. Police arrested him last month for abusing an adult woman. Investigators have not released details about how he knew the alleged victim or where they believe the abuse took place. Mitt Romney's presidential campaign brought in roughly $18 million in the second quarter of this year. That total was good enough to lead the GOP field of White House hopefuls, but was less than the amount Romney raised as a first-time presidential candidate in the opening quarter of 2007. Beltway insiders are already fretting that Romney's less-than-hoped-for total could mean problems if he manages to win the GOP nomination. Obama's team has set a goal of $60 million for the quarter, a target Democrats appear confident they'll hit when the numbers are in. The blog Politico said, whoever claims the GOP nomination is going to find it close to impossible to keep pace with the president's fundraising juggernaut.
Yeah. I just like the word juggernaut.
I love a good juggernaut.
Yeah.
But for now, at least, Romney has by far the best financial position of his GOP rivals. Tim Pawlenty, the runner-up for the Republican money race, took in only $4.2 million for the quarter. Despite Romney's relative fundraising success, the former Massachusetts governor has had some trouble in recent weeks building his lead in the poll. In June, a University of New Hampshire poll put Romney at 41% support among Republicans in the state. This month, the same poll placed his support at 35%. He also faces a growing challenge from Michelle Bachmann. In Iowa, a recent Des Moines Register poll showed Romney leading her by a slim 23% to 22% margin.
That's got to be uniquely frustrating. You wake up in the morning and realize you're being hosed by Michelle Bachmann, who's got a brain like an egg timer.
Yeah, and crazy eyes.
Ugh.
And a husband who, well, have you ever seen film footage of his husband?
No. Of Michelle Bachmann's husband?
Yeah. No. I don't think he plays for the team she thinks he plays for.
Do you suppose he just enjoys the fact he doesn't have to worry about where next month's rent is coming from?
Something like that,
yeah.
Yes.
Beat standing on a corner, Don.
Yeah. A 31-year-old horse that fell over a hillside in Penn Township, Pennsylvania, was rescued Tuesday evening. The county's animal rescue team was called to help firefighters at the Sea Horse Farm on Richmond Drive not long before 5 p.m. Owner Chris Campbell said, "We found him over the side of the hill where he shouldn't have been. He usually doesn't go that far because he's arthritic. He was in distress. He was panting very hard. He was soaking in sweat. The animal was so far over the hill that a crane with an attached sling was needed to pull it to safety. The rescue effort lasted about an hour." Frank Mangieri, one of the rescuers, said, "We got the straps underneath the chest and hips area, and we were able to spin him with a tractor. We were able to pull gently to get his backside more level because you can't pick him up at an angle with that sling. The horse, named Mr. Higgins, is blind in one eye and is arthritic. He's now on pain medication and said to be doing fine."
The horse is secretly Robin Masters, too. Nobody knows that, but it's...
Mr. Higgins.
You're listening to Legion of News. Don't forget next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program, where you, yes, you, can be entertained for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. That is coming up at rickemersonshow.com. Today we got a clown watch, also another installment of the greatest songs ever made, and we'll answer the magical question, what's that thing around Don's neck? That's coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
California Highway Patrol officers Michael Ball and Nick Herman stopped Olan Yahal Mitchell, 27, for speeding in his Toyota Is it pronounced Scion?
Yes.
Okay. His Toyota Scion.
How else would you pronounce it? What are your alternate pronunciations? Scion?
It could be. It could be a Scion, a Scion. I used to think the Cadillac, it should be pronounced Escalade.
You should totally pronounce it Escalade.
And then I found out it was Escalade.
No, you should do Escalade and just and then make people feel dumb for pronouncing it Escalade.
Escalade.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing it wrong. Anyway, so he was the guy was speeding around 2:40 a.m. on Saturday. Mitchell, who the officers believed was driving under the influence, refused to submit to field sobriety tests and was put in the front seat of the CHP Cruiser. Officer Jonathan Sloat said, while seated, Mitchell began to lick the keyboard of the officer's computer.
Mitchell!
The officer ordered Mitchell to not interfere with the equipment. Mitchell repeated the behavior, once again licking the keyboard of the cruiser's computer.
Yeah.
And the officer reached in to move the computer out of his reach. That's when Mitchell kicked the officer, prompting both officers to restrain him and put him in the back of the caged patrol cruiser.
Now, why would you not? See, this is the thing where a tasing really is called for, it seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy, I think by now you should be lucky. You should consider yourself, I think, probably fortunate if you're not just tased for just giving a guy the hairy eyeball. I mean, it doesn't really seem to be much stopping a cop from tasing you.
For talking back.
It's not like they have to do some sort of, I don't think they do like a big investigation or anything, like if you shoot a guy. If you tase somebody, they probably
He was acting up.
Yeah, why? Asking for it? Okay.
Yeah. Mitchell was booked at the Sonoma County Jail on suspicion of DUI, resisting arrest, battery on a police officer, driving without a license, and possession of marijuana. But apparently, I guess there's no particular law against licking a keyboard.
No, so not unless you're Dan Savage.
Specific there. I'll bet Byron's done that, though. I'm just saying. Licked a police officer's keyboard.
Okay.
I'm just thinking. He's a man who's done many, many things. Starting today, new subscribers to Verizon Wireless will no longer have the option of an unlimited data plan and will instead have to choose between one of several tiered options. The change will leave Sprint as the only so-called Tier 1 wireless provider offering unlimited plans. AT&T switched to the usage-based smartphone data pricing scheme last year, followed by T-Mobile. Techland reports Verizon's new plans will start at 2 gigabytes for $30 a month and that going over your data plan will cost $10 per gigabyte. Existing customers will be able to keep their unlimited plans beyond July 7th, even after upgrading to new smartphones, though. The switch seems to be a direct response to dramatic data usage increase.
It's a response to the iPhone is what it's a response to, because they're mimicking the plan that AT&T has, that AT&T introduced because of the iPhone.
Yeah, that's in the past year, smartphone data usage has almost doubled from 230 megabytes to 435 megabytes. That's your average, I guess. Consumers and businesses both demand more data, making packaged data plans a lucrative business. But they're saying it won't necessarily impact that many customers. A recent study by a company that specializes in efficiently matching customers with plans found that less than 1% of Verizon Wireless subscribers use more than 5 gigabytes, and that the overwhelming majority of smartphone users consume less than 2 gigabytes.
This is also the reason why Apple is pushing the whole business of the cloud so much and why they continue to make iPhones that have larger and larger that have more and more storage capability on the phones, because Apple is betting, this would just be my guess, Apple is betting that as the data plans become more expensive, people are going to want to try to trim costs whenever possible. And if Amazon is making you store all your stuff on the cloud and then effectively stream it to yourself every time you want it somewhere, you're going to end up just paying out of the ass for your data plans. Whereas if Apple can sell you an iPhone that has that can hold 128 gigs of information, then what will happen is every time you put something on the cloud server, it will, like while you sleep or whatever, beam itself to your phone so it's already there, meaning you only ever have to transfer it once. Mm. So the idea, if you can just keep all of your devices synced, it'll actually cost you less in the long run because of the data plan usage, where if you're having to basically download it to your phone every single time you want to listen to it or use it, you're re-downloading it. That's going to screw. I mean, data plans aren't being exceeded right now, but if we get to the point where everybody is storing stuff like out there on a computer, if you have a song that's 5 megs and every single time you want to listen to it, you're basically re-downloading it. You're just doing so as a stream. You're going to blow through your 5 gigabyte data limit like instantly. So I will guarantee you that this is why Apple is going to start doing things the way they're doing things, because they want to instead sell you a larger phone so that you don't have to pay those data bills.
That makes sense.
Yes, it does, Dawn.
Hmm.
I'm a thinker, is what I am.
Look at you, figuring stuff out.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, where we tell you the way things really are. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A man was arrested in an Indiana Walmart after an incident. Management said they noticed a man hanging out in the store for several hours acting, quote, strung out. When police arrived to talk to the man, they said he tried to run out of the automotive section garage. Once they were able to stop and search him, they identified him as Isaac Kennedy. He had a warrant and was on parole for arson and burglary. When they searched him, police say they found stolen goods, including a knife, an air pistol, a Walkman, and a Slipknot CD. They also say that he had opened a case of beer and started drinking it.
Why would he have a Walkman and a Slipknot CD?
I don't know.
Okay.
Police went and retraced the areas that the witness said Kennedy was acting suspicious, and they found that he had doused three comforters in a backpack with lighter fluid. They asked him why he did it, and he said he was mad that the pharmacy wouldn't give him his prescription because he didn't pay for it. He then told police that a bunny rabbit told him to go back inside, and that once inside, Satan had told him to spray the bag and the quilts with lighter fluid.
So the rabbit really was just the rabbit was just like a patsy.
Yeah.
Like the rabbit maybe thought that, you know, go inside because there's a chocolate bar for you. And then once he gets inside, you know, Satan turns around in a chair, sort of putting his fingers together and says, hello, John, or whatever his name is, and encourages him to douse the whole joint and set it ablaze. Okay.
Now, he had matches and a lighter, but he told the police that he didn't plan on setting anything on fire. I'm assuming because neither the rabbit nor Satan told him to.
Okay.
Also, like, B. Arthur didn't appear to him or something. He was arrested and charged with theft, failure to appear, criminal mischief, and resisting law enforcement.
You gotta wonder if this is the sort of publicity that Slipknot either really, really loves or really, really doesn't love. There's no middle ground. They either look at it and they go, yes, or they like, ah, crap.
Those are our people.
God damn it. Ah, Jesus.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Thursday right here at Legion of News, July 7th, 2011.
Although Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel ended their relationship 4 months ago, the pair may have reconciled. Us Magazine says they have been talking the whole time and decided to give it another shot. Jessica really wanted to get back together with him and just realized single life is not what it's cracked up to be. Timberlake can currently be seen in the comedy Bad Teacher, and his next feature, Friends with Benefits, opens nationwide on July 22nd. Although there has been talk that he's dating Mila Kunis, who he met on Friends with Benefits.
I didn't even know he was dating Jessica Biel. Yeah. I thought she was married to somebody.
She has got to be the most spectacularly uninteresting woman that is widely considered to be hot, I think, in America today.
I can't even really conjure up what she looks like right now. I mean, I've seen her a million times. I just can't even really come up with a picture of her in my head.
No, Vivid head Steve Hirsch initially reached out to Casey Anthony's lawyer on Tuesday to offer her a movie deal with his porn company.
Excellent.
But he's now changed his mind. He told TMZ, it's become obvious to us that Vivid fans and people in general want nothing to do with her. And that includes a XXX movie.
Like, we all wanted to see the Octomom getting it on.
We were ready to make an offer to Casey to star in one of our feature films. It's clear to me now, however, that there has been an overwhelmingly negative response to our offer, and so we've decided to withdraw it.
All right.
Yeah. HollywoodNews.com reports that actor Anthony Hopkins composed a waltz titled And the Waltz Goes On, a piece that was performed in Austria on Sunday. Hopkins attended the premiere of his waltz, which was performed by André Rieu and his orchestra. Hopkins said, I've been a great admirer of André Rieu for several decades. He's a great musician. My wife and I had the same dream of meeting him one day, and so I've sent him some music I wrote. It's a dream come true for me that André performed it with his orchestra. I'm totally knocked out by the result.
I don't understand. He just wrote a waltz for who?
A guy named André Rieu and his orchestra. Okay. I guess he just wrote a waltz, and then he also happens to like this guy, and he sent him his waltz, and he said, hey, Anthony Hopkins, I'll perform your waltz.
They didn't know each other prior to this or something. Okay, so it's like the guy just opened his mail one day, and there was a letter from Anthony Hopkins like, dear sir, I've written you a waltz. Okay, all right.
Which is interesting. I just heard a piece on NPR yesterday that they opened up this storage locker in West Hollywood that had belonged to Marlon Brando, and they found this conga drum that he had designed. He apparently was an inventor, and he worked for years and years and years on this new design to change the timber of conga drums, where you would only have to turn one peg instead of turn all five. And they told this whole elaborate story about how he worked for years with a guy to the guy was told ahead of time, don't ask him about acting. Don't talk to him about acting at all. He wants to be Marlon Brando inventor. and worked for like, I think, 7 years to try, and he got a patent.
That's fantastic.
And then he was sad, though, because apparently he couldn't find a manufacturer because it was like too expensive. But they finally found like what there actually was still one of these drums existing in this storage locker that he had built with his patented conga drum device.
I just love the idea that there was a storage locker they didn't know about or open until just recently.
Yeah, it was all, and it's all full of photos and mementos and scripts and stuff like that, and this conga drum.
That's weird.
Yeah. James Spader, who guest starred last season on The Office, has inked a deal to join the show on a regular basis for the upcoming season of the show.
And Kathy Bates, too, right?
Oh, well, she's been on it. I guess, is she coming back?
Well, there was some debate about whether she was coming back, but I think I read that she's also coming back. That may or may not be right. Maybe for just a one-shot or something.
Spader will not serve as the new boss of the Scranton branch. His character, Robert California, will move higher up within the company. Elizabeth Smart's personal kidnapping tragedy captivated the nation. Now she's going to use her experience to lend perspective to others facing similar adversity. ABC News confirms that Elizabeth Smart has been hired as an on-air contributor.
I don't really know that many people face the same kind of adversity.
I think almost no other people
It's a necessarily finite market.
No.
Yeah.
No, it was a fairly unusual situation she was in. She will be available to all programs and platforms across the news division, said NBC News spokeswoman Julie Townsend. She'll help our viewers better understand missing person stories from someone with the perspective to know what a family experiences when a loved one goes missing. Actually, she doesn't know what the family experiences. She knows what the person knows because she's the one who went missing.
I think more importantly, she's hot.
She was only 14 when she was abducted from her Salt Lake City bedroom in 2002 by a mentally disturbed former street preacher and his wife. She was held captive and raped repeatedly over the course of 8 months, during which time a massive search effort was undertaken by authorities to find her. Her harrowing ordeal was turned into a book and a CBS TV movie, The Elizabeth Smart Story. Since she's now 23 and she's been studying music at Brigham Young University and is now a staunch activist lobbying for stronger missing person legislation.
But again, a 9 on the hautism spectrum.
She is very, very attractive. She's a
really?
good-looking young woman.
And not just attractive, she's attractive in a Fox News kind of way.
Yeah. Elizabeth Hurley will have a recurring role in the upcoming season of Gossip Girl. Hurley will play media mogul Diana Payne, a woman whose arrival on the Upper East Side is definitely felt by the Gossip Girl crew.
Diana Payne. That's awesome.
She recently played villain Veronica Gale on the NBC pilot Wonder Woman, which, of course, was not picked up by the network. Reports that CeeLo Green will take part on BBC's version of The Voice are apparently false. Green's publicity rep Ann Watkins told The Hollywood Reporter that, contrary to recent reports, there's no agreement in place for CeeLo to join the cast of BBC's The Voice UK. Green claimed in an interview with The Daily Star that he was offered the coaching job and that he was planning on taking it if his schedule was not completely overbearing. The rapper-singer currently hosts the Fuse Network interview and music program, Talking to Strangers.
Fuse.
Woo! Fuse. And finally, and I know that you've been wanting to know all about this, you've been following this story breathlessly. Emily Maynard, who received the final rose from ex-boyfriend Brad Womack on The Bachelor, is in talks to headline the next season of The Bachelorette. She hasn't officially signed on yet, but it looks like a done deal, a source told Us Weekly. The source also added that Maynard wants to pursue a broadcasting career and that further exposure on The Bachelorette will only help her visibility.
I don't really understand. I mean, I don't think I've watched any of these shows except for... I watched, in terms of like the shows where they match people up. I, like everybody else, watched that the first season of that Joe Millionaire show, and then I watched what was the show with the hefty chicks? It was Mortal Love, or something. They had like the Portland girl or whatever. So I watched that. I watched that actually until the Portland girl got booted off, and then which was great because then we were all able to quit watching it. But I've never really watched The Bachelor, The Bachelorette. But I'm unclear about what they're winning. They're not really getting married at the end, are they?
I guess at least one of these couples has gotten married, but I don't, you know.
It's not like a requirement. Like when you get to the end and they go, and now you'll marry Ted, and people can just get no.
Ostensibly, you're competing, you know, for actual love, as if it really works that way, which it doesn't.
Well, it does, just not in the way that they portray it, probably.
Well, no, not in the whole, yeah. I don't watch those shows because I don't understand them either.
Is there a cash prize, do you suppose, at the end in addition to, you know, love?
I think the cash prize is that you got on TV.
The cash prize is attention, as someone says.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay. That's all the entertainment news.
Excellent. There's your entertainment news for Thursday. right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio show at rickemersonshow.com. We will have a clown watch, also another installment of the greatest songs ever made. We got about 4 minutes here, depending on whatever else you have
over
there.
I got stories aplenty.
Awesome.
A man died while he was when he was driven over by a coworker while he was inspecting her car on Wednesday. Police said a woman was outside on a break with a 75-year-old coworker named Nicholas Kamusu. This was in New Hampshire. They were discussing car problems she was having, and he offered to take a look at her Ford Expedition. The woman got into her vehicle to get her keys while Kamusu climbed underneath the vehicle. Without realizing he was underneath the car, the woman moved the vehicle and drove over him. Deputy Chief Sean Patton of the Salem Police Department said, "I believe he was underneath the vehicle for approximately 30 or 40 feet. He did sustain life-threatening injuries at the scene." Kamusu died before a medical helicopter could take him to the hospital. Residents of the area said they had no clue what was going on when they saw several police cars on the street. Norberto Borges, your man on the street, said he saw a woman who was clearly distraught. "She looked like she was pretty shook up," he said.
And so how far was the guy dragged?
I said 30 or 40 feet.
You know, how'd you like to be the guy who has to measure that? Like, you're just out on the street with some sort of like a tape measure and a fat caliper, trying to figure out exactly how far down the street the guy was pulled.
Although when you're estimating 30 or 40 feet, there might be a point where you're just looking at the smears and going, that's about 30 or 40
feet.
Yeah,
I'm going to go to lunch now if it's all the same to you.
Let's say 30 or 40.
And so how did he get dragged? I mean,
He was 75 years old, and he said, "I'll help you with your car, little lady." And she said, "Okay, I'll get my keys." And then she got her keys and got in the car and I guess was going to drive it somewhere so he could look at it and didn't realize he'd already crawled underneath. And
you would think the sort of "ow, ow, please stop" would have given it away, maybe.
Yeah, but it was an Expedition. And, you know, one of the problems with, like, the big SUVs is that they're very solid and fairly soundproof.
No, that's true. That's true. Being drowned out by a Pussycat Doll CD.
Right. Yeah. She was listening to Slipknot.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
If you saw Steven Spielberg's 2004 film The Terminal, and if you did, I pity you, in which Tom Hanks' character was trapped in an airport terminal, there is a fellow named Robert Vladislav Parzelski who came fairly close to living that as well. The details of his story are a bit sketchy, but reporters so far have been able to uncover that the 44-year-old Polish man arrived in Sao Paulo, Brazil, on board a British Airways flight from London on June 17th. He had planned on meeting a friend there, but when no one showed up, he simply stayed for the next 18 days. Parzelski arrived without any cash or even a rudimentary understanding of Portuguese, but fortunately for him, airport custodians took notice and kept him supplied with water, yogurt, and cigarettes. His stay soon caught the attention of the local media, and reporters from the newspaper attempted to get him to tell his story. They tried Portuguese, French, and Spanish until Parzelski finally replied, "I'm Poland." On June 30th, reporters brought with them a Polish doctor from Sao Paulo to speak to him. The doctor was able to find out a little more of the story. Parzelski said he left his family in London and traveled to Brazil on a one-way ticket that he had received from a Polish friend who had asked him to return with two telephone sets. Calling in the Polish consulate in Sao Paulo did not help to explain why Parzelski had agreed to travel to Brazil without any money or a return ticket to acquire two telephones. Whatever is going on, he appears to have taken it back to London with him. He left Sao Paulo on Tuesday afternoon on board a Swiss Air flight and waved goodbye to newspaper reporters.
It seems like there's a really great Polish joke in here somewhere. If we only knew more of the details, it seems like we're just missing one element to put that together. Two telephones. No, I got nothing.
No.
All right. So on that note, we'll just... wait, hold on. Where's my... with the who's it with the what now?
I'm
the,
Poland.
The thing. I am Africa. All right. Excellent. Fantastic. And with that, we bring down the curtain on another exciting episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson radio program is next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can listen for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in Glorious, Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?